Well, Monday, July 30th, was the United Nations World Day Against Trafficking in Persons, raising awareness of a global issue that a lot of people still don't know about. According to the International Labor Organization, 21 million people worldwide are victims of forced labor. Many of those are victims of human trafficking. 71% of human trafficking victims are women and girls. In 2010, the UN enacted a global plan of action to combat human trafficking. The problem, though, persists. So what is being done about it? What more can be done? And what can we do as individuals? Judith Kelly joins us now on the phone. She's the Dean of Duke University's Sanford School of Public Policy, also the author of the 2017 book Scorecard Diplomacy, Grading States to Influence Their Reputation and Behavior. You can find more about the book and that issue online at scorecarddiplomacy.org. Dr. Kelly, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me today, Aaron.
So let's talk about not just the World Day Against Human Trafficking, but the issue of human trafficking in general. How extensive is the problem worldwide, and how extensive is it here in the U.S. and locally?
Well, you mentioned some numbers, and those are the numbers we do commonly sort of hear used, but the difficulty, of course, is that this is by nature a hidden problem. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a crime, and so keeping track of these figures is really difficult, and also people think about different things as being human trafficking. So are we going to think about forced marriages as being part of human trafficking? Is forced labor part of human trafficking? So a lot of it depends on, you know, on how you decide to count, let alone the difficult accounting. There's one answer that's always going to hold true, though. It's too much and too many people. That it's not just something that happens every now and then. We really are talking about millions of people, and the ILO has estimated human trafficking and forced labor sort of combined, the illicit profits of that, of being in the $150 billion range nationwide. So, you know, it's a big problem. Here in North Carolina, it's a big problem in North Carolina. It's one of the fastest growing crimes in the United States, and North Carolina has a lot of factors that lends itself to human trafficking blossoming right here in the Triangle. But I want to take just, if I may, just a step back, because people always assume that they know what we're talking about, and I already said, you know, what are we going to count? Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of people think that human trafficking is sex trafficking. And there is a lot of sex trafficking going on, but a lot of this is agricultural in North Carolina, you know, in agricultural labor. That's where people come, and then they have their passports taken away, and they're essentially in a bondage system where they get charged fees for whatever meager housing and meals they get, and they can't repay the money that they were charged to get here in the first place, and so they're stuck in this relationship with a so-called employer, but they don't have their passport, and they can never get out from under the debt they've accumulated to the smugglers, you know, who bought them here. And so that's another type, you know. So those kinds of debt bondage, and where there's a use of fraud or coercion or force, are all things that we think about as human trafficking.
I was going to ask about the different ways that it manifests itself. What is life like then for people who get caught in that situation?
Well, it's extremely desperate and hopeless. You know, it depends, of course, on which situation they're in. But there are also cases of people who are domestic servants, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, they may have come here under some understanding that they were going to be offered a job as an au pair or something like this, and they're essentially held with very few degrees of freedom and not much ability to communicate with the outside world. And so that's going to be a very different situation from somebody who goes into the field every morning and is picking cotton and working really hard and sleeping in sheds and gets some small amount of money that then they have to pay back. And that's going to be very different from somebody who is caught in a sex trafficking setup. So the experiences are very varied, but they, I think, uniformly horrible and, you know, must feel extremely desperate to get out of. Usually people get into these situations because they're desperate to begin with. These situations only make them even more desperate because they are without recourse in so many ways, which is what makes it trafficking. It's the coercion, it's the force, it's the fraud. So in North Carolina, you know, we were talking about some of the bigger numbers globally, but we do have more of a handle on it in terms of just how we're counting things in North Carolina. There's a national human trafficking hotline, the number of which we should be sure to share with the people. Mm-hmm. And like last year, they got about a little under 900 calls, and there were over 200 cases reported, and over close to 1,000 victims were identified through these cases just in 1 year. And in North Carolina, we're really talking about agriculture, domestic work, even begging rings. A lot of times you can find victims of human trafficking in like a massage, a spa business, nail salons, those kinds of things, even in things like the online ad venues where different services are offered. And it's mostly adults, but it's, I would say, the number suggests it's at least a third are minors. And maybe about 75%, as you mentioned, are women. So it still does fall along those normal big trends.
Is this a problem that's getting worse, and what's driving it?
It's hard to know whether it's getting worse because we're getting better at tracking it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to see the numbers go up from year to year if you look over the last 5 years generally. And in some ways, we want that because we want to be arresting people and be cracking down on it. And so the more effort that we are putting into fighting the problem, the more it's actually going to look like the problem might be getting worse. What drives it, you know, what drives it for one person versus another may be very different. There are cases around the world where families essentially sell their own children, which is inconceivable to some of us, but is not that horrible in the way that they normally operate. Sometimes it's done with a hope of that the person will actually be better off. Again, it's often fraud and deception that goes into it, but usually it's because people are desperate and they're not able to care for, say, their own children, and they think that if they send them here or there, they're going to be better taken care of. You know, but oftentimes it's people who are going in search of a better life for themselves, and they get deceived into thinking that there's something at the other end. And we should also talk about the flow of people that we have now, the refugee flow that we have coming from Central and from south of the border. People tend to get smuggling and trafficking mixed up. The big difference here is consent, that people consent to be smuggled. But people who are consenting to be smuggled today, south of our border, coming across the border, are people who are consenting to be smuggled because they're fleeing mm-hmm. horrible situations. They're fleeing gang violence. You know, they're fleeing drug crime and these things. So they enter into a smuggling agreement, but then they become vulnerable to exploitation. And that's why it, you know, as much as I am not in support of children being torn away from parents at their borders, we do need to be extremely careful about people coming across the border. What are they saying they're coming across the border as? Because we really don't want people to be trafficked across the border. And we certainly don't want children to be trafficked across the border. But again, to circle back to your initial question about what are the motivating factors, it's usually desperation or outright just fleeing horrible conditions, or in some cases just a hope for a better life and then being misled about what the opportunities actually are.
Speaking with Judith Kelly, again, Dean of Duke University's Sanford School of Public Policy. We're talking about human trafficking because this past Monday, the 30th, was the UN's World Day Against Trafficking in Persons, and sort of moving to the question of what is and what can be done to combat human trafficking. I know just raising awareness with days like that and conversations like this are kind of a big factor, but what else can be done and what else is being done?
Well, I certainly hope that people are aware of the fact that there is a national human trafficking hotline. And anyone can Google it, but I'll say the number here right now. Mm-hmm. It's 1-888-373-7888. And that number, anybody can call, a victim can call. If you think you've seen something suspicious, which is often people, for example, who are in relationships where there are big differences in their ages or things like this, if there's something that gives you pause, you shouldn't hesitate to call this hotline number, and they can help you think through what you've seen and what actions might be needed. And that is that's a national hotline. That number and awareness is also being distributed now. North Carolina has passed a law that means that those signs with that information has to be available, for example, now in liquor stores. So just being aware of what to do if you spot something suspicious is important. Of course, there's also a number of nonprofit organizations, civil society organizations, mm-hmm. who are trying to help, you know, so people can support financially. Centers for victims who once somebody does call the hotline and needs help, it's not just a matter of extricating them from that situation and then sending them back to where they came from. First of all, they're likely to be very traumatized. They're likely to be without means. Sometimes going back isn't safe. And so we do have these shelters for victims, and a lot of times their whereabouts are not publicly advertised because we don't want to attract traffickers to those shelters. But it is possible to find out the organizations that support these and to donate to those centers. And, you know, in North Carolina, we have there's a legislatively mandated body, the North Carolina Human Trafficking Commission, which is led by Libby McGee Coles, which is leading the effort sort of on a state level. It's possible to be in touch there and figure out how one can be supportive of their efforts.
Again, speaking with Dr. Judith Kelly, and you mentioned the hotline, and again, the number 888-373-7888 for people who see anything suspicious and want to report it. What are some of the signs that people might want to be on the lookout for?
Well, as I mentioned, definitely if you see people who are being accompanied by, you know, it looks like they're in an amorous relationship that's hugely off balance in terms of ages, mm-hmm. is problematic. There are also begging rings, so people who may be on the street, if they look like they're being managed by others, that's a problem. You know, if you're in a massage or even like a parlor for getting your nails and things done, you should look out for signs of whether the people who are working there seem to be happily going about providing their services, or, you know, are there any signs that they are being mistreated or exploited? You know, a lot of these things are not things that ordinary folks are going to spot in their everyday lives. But, you know, if you work in the agricultural industry, you could be aware of some of your subcontractors and suppliers, mm-hmm. and the types of work arrangements they may be having for their workers if you live in those communities.
Anything else that people need to know about the issue?
I don't know if there's any particular nugget, except I guess just don't judge a book by its cover right away. Things are not always what they seem, and people who come here often come because they're desperate, and what they need is not for us to just turn a back of them and put them all in the same box. And but we need to be very, very aware of why they're here, and to read the signs of what's going on in their lives and how we can be helpful.
Again, the number for the trafficking hotline, 888-373-7888. Dr. Kelly also mentioned the North Carolina Human Trafficking Commission, which is on the State Department of Justice's website, ncdoj.gov, or you can just Google North Carolina Human Trafficking Commission and it'll come right up. Dr. Judith Kelly, thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Have a good day.